Well, how is your garden growing? If you have a vegetable garden, I hope it's doing well. If you have a flower garden, I hope it's doing well. And if you have both, all the better. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk. We welcome Judy Wright Rozelle, who is the assistant superintendent of the West Madison Agricultural Research Station at the UW-Madison, and Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, with us on this edition of Garden Talk to answer your gardening questions, be it the vegetables or the fruits, I'm sure, or the vegetables. I'm sure they'll be able to help out. And if you'd like to join in, the number's 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Give a call. Lisa, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks.
And Judy, welcome. This is your first time here. Glad to have you with us.
Yes, it is my first time, and thanks.
What does an assistant superintendent of the West Madison Ag Research Station do?
Well,
a lot of different things.
We could talk for a half hour, but to make it short, the assistant superintendent works with the superintendent. We supervise the operations of the West Madison Station. That's 570 acres. And there's lots of researchers that come out from the university with their work on breeding programs, disease resistant. And then I manage the director of the trial and demonstration garden, which is now about 7 acres. And we do a lot of trialing for different companies, seed companies.
Mm-hmm.
We're just working with the new Wisconsin grape growers on grape trials. And we just put in a great big research project for wine grapes and table grapes. So it really varies from day to day.
Well, lots of it. And you have some great events out there, too.
Yes, we do. In fact, one is coming up this next week on July 22nd. We have an evening walk with Brian Huddleston. And everything is free, and you don't need to register. You can just walk in and join us at 6 o'clock on the 22nd, and Brian will walk through the garden and show people what diseases we have. We have problems just like anyone else that's growing in their backyard. So,
Dr. Death.
Yes.
He likes to call himself. He's a frequent guest on our program.
Well, he's a real joy to have in the garden, so people should come out and enjoy a walk with him.
Well, we'll talk about some other. I know you have some other events coming up, too. We get to those, but you know what? Every one of our phone lines is filled. So let's go to the phones and see what's on people's minds. Claude in La Crosse is up first. Hi, Claude.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have two mature, established asparagus beds, which I'd like to consolidate. And I have two questions. One, when is the best time of year to transplant mature asparagus plants? And number two, are the methods for doing that any different than for planting new plants?
Man, I didn't know that you could really transplant a mature asparagus bed. Judy, let's start with you.
That would be really hard because the roots are so deep to dig them up. Right, Lisa,
yeah.
In your estimation. I know we've even tried to move and just eradicate asparagus from the garden, and it's almost impossible to get deep enough because when you start to plant asparagus, you bury it very deeply.
Well, that's right. I originally planted those 10 to 12 inches deep, and so I thought I could dig down a foot or so, but you're saying the roots go even deeper?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
You know, they're going to be very, very deep, and if you want to save the collection, it's worth trying, but I think you're going to really have a hard time digging deeply enough to get down and get all the roots that would be make the plant really viable in the future.
Would the best time to try that be in the spring when they're dormant?
Lisa, what do you think?
That would be my guess.
Yeah, or, you know, I don't know why you couldn't dig them in the fall and get them all ready, and then they'd have their roots down ready to go in the spring.
Yeah, fall might work.
Well, in the fall, typically, after they've got the berries on them, I cut them off.
Mm-hmm. You cut off the ferny growth then?
I cut off everything. That's the way I normally do it. So you're saying that would be the time then to dig down to the roots and transplant those?
Well, because it's a spring-producing plant, it usually is ready to grow real early in the spring, and I guess
right.
I kind of go by that when I'm transplanting some things that I'm not real sure of. From one place to the other. So if it's going to be early producing, I just transplant it in the fall so it has that few weeks into the fall to get ready.
Sure.
No, I should bring along the entire plant.
No.
Yes.
What did you say? Bring along the...
Well, the plant is like 3 or 4 feet tall. in the fall, and normally I cut that off. That's the practice.
Yeah.
You're saying if I transplant it, I should take all of that with me?
Oh, no, no. Cut all that dead material down,
okay.
Just like you
right.
would in your caring for the fall. You know,
right.
When you're,
okay. All right.
Yes.
Well, I'll try it and see what happens.
All okay. right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And Denise in Watertown, on to you now. Hi, Denise.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been blessed with five black walnut trees in my yard.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, I do plant the tulips and the impatiens and everything around, you know, the black walnuts. And some of my plants are experimental. Is there anything I can do to prepare my bed, put up a barrier using landscape fabric and then putting my dirt on top of that will prevent that poison from coming up through there?
No.
No.
No. Nothing to neutralize that poison?
What about a raised bed?
That will certainly help.
Yeah.
That could work.
I do have some raised beds, you know, and I can tell, you know, which ones are more sensitive to those. But, you know, my husband just thought that there was something that we could do to neutralize that.
No, other than, do you have the Extension publication that recommends the list of plants that are not so susceptible to walnut toxicity?
Yes, I have had that. Okay. One of the things I find out when I go and shop for flowers,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people aren't knowledgeable about that. Or I know the names, you know, the common names and not the scientific name.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, so the fact sheet that we have does list the common names. You might find that going to the garden center armed with that mm-hmm. might be
okay.
helpful.
And you could go online to the UW Extension Learning Store?
Yep. learningstore.uwex.edu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And find that publication.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Vicki in Racine. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You provide such a nice service to the community.
Well, thank you.
My question is about euonymus scale. We have a long-established euonymus shrub, and it last year had a few scales on it, and this year seems to be really being attacked by these scales. I understand this is really something that can be difficult to control and often kills the shrub, but I'm not willing to give up without a fight. Right now, I understand that the female of the species are over the, I think they call them crawlers, are over, and the branches now have the male scales on the leaves. My question is, how do I treat this, and is there anything that I can do now, and then, you know, as it goes more dormant in the fall, and anything that I can do to really treat this and hopefully save the shrub?
Boy, euonymus scale is tough. The crawlers are out between 500 and 700 degree days, but we have pretty much passed that, like you were saying, and we've got the adults that are forming. You can use a product like imidacloprid, which is Merit, and apply that to the ground. The problem is, you know, if you were, for instance, in my own backyard, I have magnolia scale. And I applied imidacloprid, but I put it on probably too late. It should have gone on in May because the tree takes a long time to take that all up and get it through the vascular system and so on. So if this is a large plant, you may wish you had put it on earlier, but I think still putting it on now will be helpful, and put it on again in the spring.
Okay. Is there anything that would help? Would it help to, like, get the male scales off the leaves at all? Or is that just treating a plant is the most effective way to help save it?
You could also use one of, you can Let's see now, is this the evergreen euonymus?
Yes, it's the glossy-leaved evergreen.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out if we can use dormant oils
on
that.
That's what I wonder, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether... You could check out the dormant oil products and see whether that is something you can use. You have to have the plant listed on the label as well as the pest. We're just not sure, because it's a semi-evergreen, whether that would work. You might be able to use a product like neem oil. Mm-hmm. Again, check, because those are some of the things that are used to suffocate scale insects.
Uh-huh.
And
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I had been told that use of a dormant oil at this time of year might not be a great thing to do because it's so hot. And
yeah.
It seemed to be, and it's in a southern exposure.
Yeah, that's correct.
Right. Yeah, I didn't mean to put it on at this time of year, but that it was another treatment that you could use at the appropriate time.
I see. I understand. Mm. It sounds a little complex, but I'm not willing to give up the plant without a fight. And I appreciate your help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling, Vicki. Appreciate your call. And Jose in Green Bay, I believe, is up next. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is that I have four plants of habanero plants.
Yeah.
And they haven't grown much since I planted them. And I'm just concerned because they haven't grown, and the leaves turn yellow and then green and yellow, and I don't know if it's the water or what am I doing wrong. And I'm anxious to get the habaneros, but they're not growing.
So the plants aren't growing much. The leaves have turned yellow.
Yes.
And you're not getting any fruit or.
I see small buds. I mean, the plant is probably
flowering.
Like three. Yeah. Probably 4 inches tall.
Oh, and that's it?
Yeah. And I see that small flowers are coming up, but then it just turns yellow. It turns yellow right now, and it's not dead, but
you don't have a black walnut tree nearby, do you?
No, it's open to the. I mean, it's direct under the sunlight. So,
have you gardened in this spot before?
No, I just moved into that house and. It used to be an area where there used to be mulch.
Oh, okay.
So I took the mulch out and added some fresh soil to that part.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I'm growing stuff in there, but I got like tomatoes and other stuff around it, and everything else seems to be grown except for
the habanero.
For the peppers, which...
Yeah.
Is it just the habanero, or is it all kinds?
No, he said he said just the habanero.
Yeah, okay. I have a jalapeno next to it,
uh-huh.
And the jalapeno is not growing. I mean, it's not as tall either. It's probably about only 10 inches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
and it has already two habaneros, peppers already, a decent size. But, jalapeno peppers, but the habaneros are not working out for me, so...
What's your weather been like?
That's what I...
It's been in the 70s, mid-70s.
Mm-hmm. I think what Lisa's thinking is the same thing I'm thinking. That I know our peppers at the research station are not doing as... They're way behind. They're about 3 weeks behind because we haven't had enough heat, and habaneros are really more sensitive to cold weather.
Okay.
That could be part of it. You're talking about the yellowing leaves. That makes me think there's a little bit of a nitrogen problem.
Is there a way that I can test my water, maybe? Because I lived in Bellevue, which is a suburb of Green Bay.
Uh-huh.
And they used to tell me that they used to have water problems, so I don't know if I do like a pH or check the pH, do you think that would be...
I think it's probably not too much of a water problem. Do you have city water or well water?
I think that now they're connected to the Manitowoc City.
I think, you could, if you wanted to spend a little money and take a soil sample and send it to your extension office, and they could send it to the soil lab, and you would kind of know for next year what your level is. You could be real low in nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium, especially with the mulch on that soil before. That the organisms that are decaying, working to decay the mulch, will eat up a lot of the nitrogen, so that could be a problem.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's worth a try, but I'm guessing that cold weather didn't help.
Yeah, and if it doesn't drain very well in that particular area, right, too, that could be a problem as well.
So something else to consider. Jose, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Judy Rozelle, Assistant Superintendent of the West Madison Ag Research Station at UW-Madison, one of our guests. The other, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join our conversation on this edition of Garden Talk, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Larry in Bayfield is up next. Hi, Larry. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I've got a couple of quick questions here. I used some old seeds for dill that the package had not been opened, but they didn't germinate. What's the recommendation on using older seeds?
Where did you store the seeds?
Well, I stored them in the building, but it gets cold in the winter, and so it would have got down to freezing in there.
Yeah, that may not be, may not keep them viable. Usually, if you're going to keep seeds over for a year, you need to store them in like a refrigerator at 40 degrees or something. And dill seed, I know, are not very viable. They don't have a long life, so.
Oh. So you're probably out of luck on that.
Yeah, well, I bought new ones.
Thanks, Larry.
Well, you had talked about asparagus.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering, can I start asparagus plants from seed?
Oh, yes, you can. It takes a long time to get a mature plant, but we had someone doing that at the research station because they were just doing some crossing to play around with some asparagus, and you get some nice little seedlings, and it just takes a bit longer than getting a nice mature plant.
Can I plant them directly in the garden spot?
You can if you can keep it weeded so you can tell where they are and know, you know, which is the asparagus. And
All right. I'll give that a try. Another question I have is, I've been trying to buy seeds for the money plant. I believe it's called Lorium, but I don't know. But
Lunaria? Yeah, Honesty, yeah. Or
okay.
Where do you get those at?
Yikes.
Oh, did you try Jung's?
No, I didn't. I don't have their catalog and things, so I didn't know where to go. I did try Linder's in the Twin Cities to get some, but...
Uh-huh. Have you gone to, do you use the computer to do any searching or anything? You could maybe look.
I'm computer illiterate.
Okay. Well, I wonder about Seed Savers. Do you think they
Seed Savers might, you know, I've seen them at a lot of different places. I think it just probably varies.
And I think Johnny's had some 2 years ago.
Johnny's
is a seed company out of Maine.
Okay. All right. I'll start searching through for the seed companies. And I have another question, if I may. Mr. Mueller made a comment about black walnut. I have a black walnut growing close to my garden. I've been thinking about putting the leaves on for mulch or, you know, humus. Is that a bad idea?
Bad idea.
Bad idea.
Okay. I won't do
Don't do that. Thanks, Larry. Thanks a lot for calling. Not something you want to do. Well, you can do it, but you just will have a lot of problems with your garden. Dave and Merrill, you're next. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I'm calling about blueberries. My parents have some nice blueberry shrubs, and I'm wondering, can a person take a shoot off of there, or do they need to take the fruit and try and germinate it? Or, well, how can I get some to plant along the south side of my house?
Okay, that's a good question. I'm not sure about blueberries.
Yeah, Judy and I are both looking at each other.
I know, we're both looking. I don't know if you could take a shoot and root it in some potting material. I'm not sure. You know, they are readily available at stores, but if you wanted to take the shoots from your parents, and I'm not sure about the seeds either.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to look in Michael Durr's manual of... propagation and
for woody ornamentals.
Exactly, for the woody ornamentals. I'm trying to think. I don't even think we have any publications specifically on blueberries that would help you. Minnesota Extension has a good blueberry publication, but I don't think it addresses propagation either.
No, it's more than...
Is there a place that you would look online to, or just Google it, or...
Yeah, I try Googling blueberry propagation and see what...
yeah, there's... If you, I just put in blueberry rooting, and I got quite a few... quite a few hits here on it, which I, you know, I don't can't take the time right now to read.
Yeah.
But
right.
there are two or three public the first two or three that you get talk about rooting.
All right, and I do have one other question about asparagus. You guys were talking about that earlier. I bought a mature asparagus plant and planted it, but I must not have read the directions correctly. Need to get, when you buy the plant, do you have to get that a good 12 inches down? And since I didn't, should I pull it up and dig it further down?
How long has it been planted?
May.
Oh, yes, I guess I would.
Okay.
It's going to make it a much stronger plant if you, what you do is you bury it in a trench, and then you only cover so much until it grows a little, and then you cover a little more.
So you dig a trench, put it at the bottom,
right.
and you won't have the trench totally filled in. But as the plant grows, you start
keep filling it in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Hey,
yeah, appreciate the call. Irene in Delafield, it's your turn now. Hi, Irene.
Hi.
Thanks for
taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I've got Japanese beetles all over my grapes. How do I eliminate them?
Oh, has Judy got an answer for you?
Well, we have a seedless table grape and a wine grape collection at the station, and I spent yesterday fighting them because they just started emerging, and they love grapes. I was using a compound called Pyganic, which is pyrethrin, but that just kills them. And so I talked to Phil Pelletieri, and he said, go and get some neem oil, 70% neem oil. Your stores carry it.
Neem, N-E-E-M?
Yes.
It's a botanical from the neem plant.
Okay.
Right. It's azadirachtin. You'll also find it. And it's really a chemical that is extracted from a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really safe to use. It's from India. You spray that on the leaves, and it doesn't kill the insects, but it's a feeding deterrent. And I went out this morning. I sprayed yesterday and went out this morning, and we had 5 beetles on all of our great big grape collection.
And that was it?
That was it. And yesterday we were counting 350 on one leaf or on the collection of small collection. So I don't know how long that will last. But we're going to be monitoring it, and so I was really happy because we were worried we were going to lose all of our grapes.
Okay.
Can you apply that neem oil to other products or to other plants as well? Would it have the similar effect?
Yes, it would, and I'm not sure all of the plants that it's labeled for, but you can look, and it's a long list. I just started looking at it yesterday because it's been on the market a long time, but this is a newer concentrated, I think, and... Before you had to have it on the plants, and it had to be building up within the plants. And this surprised me that I sprayed once, and it's keeping
it
them from feeding. Yes.
So it's a new neem oil.
Well, to me, it's very new, and I had not seen it at 70% neem oil.
Oh, so it's 70% is the key.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. There you go, Irene.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Appreciate that very much. And I'm sure a lot of other people appreciate it as well. 70% neem oil. As I know, a lot of people have questions about those Japanese beetles. Barbara in Marshfield, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm wondering about when's the best time for me to transplant my rhubarb plant. You know, we're going to be coming into very, very hot weather. And is it better to do it now or wait until the spring? Or can I do it any old time?
Boy.
Rhubarb is pretty hardy, isn't it?
It is, but that's going to be another one that's kind of hard to transplant, I think. But I guess I would do that again in the fall, not in the spring, because it's going to be wanting to grow immediately in the spring.
Yeah, I believe that.
You know, get all the leaf tissue off and transplant it and keep it nice and moist, and maybe when the ground freezes, mulch it a little.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it now.
No.
Wondering about that. Well, then when I do plant a transplant in early spring.
No, no, in
fall.
Fall.
Fall. you advise I transplant it in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, okay. Well, then I was wondering then, can I just split the original plant with a shovel, break the roots up in half and do a little bit? Or do I have to dig the whole plant out?
I would dig the whole plant out.
Yeah. Because you're going to be stressing it, moving it, an older plant like that.
Yeah.
And, you okay. know, and then you're not going to want to harvest from it the first spring or so, because that would really stress it. It's going to need time to settle in and grow.
Oh, okay. Now, what kind of soil? I live in Marshfield where the my soil is very heavy, no sand in it at all.
Oh, does it have clay, or are you just, it's like a heavy silt loam, or a...
Well, it's very solid. I suppose you could call it somewhat clay. I put all my leaves and grass in that area to try to give it some of that kind of, but it just seems like the soil is kind of heavy. There's no sand in this area at all.
Okay. Well, you've begun to do something, I mean, really good to put in the leaves and things to keep that. To help with it, you could get some compost and add that, dig it in before you start planting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If you have your own garden compost, that would be great.
Yeah, that's what I would be using.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then one other thing. Should I plant it in a really sunny area or a semi?
Oh, no, real sun, full sun.
Real sun, real sun.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You've been wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, too. Barbara, thank you. Sue in Appleton. We're on to you now. Hi, Sue.
My timer just went off. I'm sorry. I have corydalis that my pink one is doing just great, and my white one has on the leaves green streaks by the veins, and then the rest of it is very yellow, almost to white. Mm. I have...
This is perennial corydalis, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I moved it. Thinking that might help, but I'm wondering, is this something that's in the soil, or...
No, it's probably a reaction to being moved. Also, those are not very long-lived plants.
I did move it before, I mean, I moved it after this, that it started getting this, I don't want to say chlorosis, because...
Yeah, because it's kind of whitish.
Because it's not chlorosis, but it kind of looks like it.
Yeah, I've seen that kind of... look, I guess you could call it.
Uh-huh.
I've seen that
pattern.
On corydalis before. How old of a plant is it?
Oh, it was doing well for like 5 years before.
Okay. That's just about the length of its lifespan, 3 to 5 years, and then they seed to produce new plants. And I hate to tell you this, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's about the look that I've usually seen before they've petered
expire.
Out on me. Yes. Thank you, Larry.
the pink one is growing and multiplying and everything, mm-hmm. and that was I got that at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Different species have different life cycles, but just about all of them are about 5 years.
They're might look for the same problem on the other plant next year.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So when the seedlings come up, if you want to keep your corydalis going, don't pull them out, is the message there.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, one of the new books that I've had a chance to take a look at is the 2009 Wisconsin Garden Journal. It's the 14th edition of this journal. It's called Gardening for the Senses, some beautiful photography, but a lot of other great information in the book. You tell us about it a little bit.
Well, the Master Gardeners of
Madison mm-hmm. Area Master Gardeners Association, otherwise known as MAMGA,
publish this every year. And one of the reasons I'm here is that I've written an article about how to design a garden so that you have plants that will fill your life with senses as you walk through the garden. So that's mm-hmm. the main feature of this, but there's lots of other information in there, Lisa, right?
Yeah, they put this out on a yearly basis. It's a fundraiser for the Madison Area Master Gardeners Association, and it's a really wonderful journal because it's not only for journaling. It has all the months, and it has spaces for you to write next to each day so you can keep track of things, but it also has monthly articles that have the tasks that you need to do for each month, and of course, every year there's there's a different theme. So this year, again, it's gardening for the senses, but in previous years, it's been bulbs. So they've had lots of bulb articles or ponds or what have you. They've been doing this since, I believe, the 80s, 70s or 80s.
Yeah. And then
it's just a wonderful photography, too, for every month.
And in the back of the book this year, there's a list of plants that you can purchase that have fragrance and textures and different things that really work well in a sense garden, sensory garden. So,
yeah, it's a beautiful book. I love the photography in it. And as you say, it's kind of cool to have all the tasks that you've got for each particular month, along with, obviously, it's a calendar, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a chance to put some notes in. Be the kind of thing you'd, and I bet there are people who have been doing this for 14 years and probably have all 14 copies of the, the past copies
most
of the
likely.
Book that you can go back and refer back to, which is kind of cool. I like that idea.
Yeah.
What is the, it costs, what, $14.95, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And we, the MAMGA group has it available at the, Garden Expo every year, but they also have it available in Madison area and other areas around the state in bookstores and gift
shops.
So
your local bookstore can order one if you...
Yeah, and you can also get it online at the MAMGA if you just Google in M-A-M-G-A. And maybe if you put Master Gardener, that should bring it up, and you can also order from the website.
It's also available at our research station. If people come to our activities, it'll be available there. And it's also available at Olbeck Gardens. So.
So lots of places. And if you're not near any particular place we mentioned, you can just go online to MAMGA, M-A-M-G-A, or just go to your local bookstore and tell them you want a copy of the 2009 Wisconsin Garden Journal, the 14th edition, Gardening for the Senses. It's a cool book. Kathy in Door County has a question or comment. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Actually, one of the reasons I also wanted to find out is a really good book to tell me what to do with all the different plants. I'm having a problem finding information on my big oriental poppies, and I don't know when to cut the pods off. I don't know if you can use the pod seeds to make new plants. And, you know, I can't find any book that I have with that information. And is there a really good comprehensive book that will tell me about all my different plants?
I wish there was one book. And
why don't you make one?
Why don't you make one, Kathy?
I don't know that much about plants.
I think it would be so many volumes.
Yeah,
I mean, I must have 20 books.
Yes.
And I've gone through all my books, you know, looking for what to do. And some of them have some information, some have others. But, you know, it would be nice to know when to plant, how long the life is, like you were talking, where to cut them off, when to cut them off. You know, it's just that's really good information for somebody that doesn't know much.
Well, I tell you what. I wish we could help you out on that one, but I have not found anything myself. I just did a quick search, but
there are numbers of good books out there, but whether they contain that particular poppy information, I don't know. Yeah, you can grow the seeds that are in the pods. I'm not sure
how you do it.
They'll pretty much self-seed. Poppies do once you get them going. They're kind of like hollyhocks. You know, that they'll drop the seed and they can keep going. And they are dieback plants. By that, I mean that they don't stay green all through the year.
When do I cut them off?
Usually you'd want to treat them a bit like tulips so that they get the energy back into the root, if I remember right.
So you wait until they're brown and then you cut them off.
No, my poppies are right in front of my hollyhocks. And I have mulch down on the ground. How do the seeds get through to seed again if you use mulch?
Well, that's a problem with using mulch. Yeah, you're going to be covering up the seeds, and then they're not real sturdy little plants coming through, so it's not like some of the weeds that will come through mulch and
really?
It's 3 inches thick. So,
yeah.
And you had mentioned earlier about nitrogen, and you know, since I do use a lot of mulch, how do you get nitrogen into the soil?
Well, it depends on, I guess, what form and what you're trying to get it to. Are you trying to get it to shrubs and trees or annuals, perennials? Or?
Well, I've got all. I mean, I have a lot of annuals and I have a lot of perennials, and this year nothing seems to be doing that great.
Well, you know,
the weather.
Yeah, a lot of it is the weather this year. Lisa and I were just talking on the way over to the studio that we were comparing the different gardens we have. She at her extension site, and I out at the, or we out at the station, and everything is growing very strangely this year. Doesn't seem to be growing vigorously. Some things are very short. We were talking about the sweet potato vine, which usually is something you have to keep under control, and it's so small this year. So I think it's partly that. But you can use a slow-release fertilizer, something like a 14-14-14, and rake it into your mulch, and that should help. That would be good for any of the things you need to fertilize.
Does Miracle-Gro have a shelf life?
Well, if it's unopened, it can lose some of the nitrogen, but... if you keep it in a plastic container with a lid on it or keep the bag closed, it would last, you know, quite
a long time.
Like how long?
Oh, probably
several years.
Yeah, a couple of years.
Oh, not 10?
Well, 10 is getting a little hot.
That might be
out there.
I think that's what I used this spring.
You know,
was really, really old. Okay.
Yeah.
I thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Judy Wright, Roselle, and Lisa Johnson, our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And we have kind of a Garden Talk topic coming up next Thursday. And our last caller from Door County, I hope you're still listening. You better come join us at the Peninsula Players Theater next week, Thursday. That's the 24th. I'll be broadcasting live from there. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And I know we'll be talking about the cherry business with Dean Vollenberg, the Door County ag agent from Sturgeon Bay and a cherry grower as well. We'll be taking a look at exploring Door County later in the show. But you would have a chance to join in, ask your questions, come early, and I'll sit around and gab with you a little bit. And afterwards, I am going to a fish boil, and you're invited, so you can come to the fish boil with me, too. That's on Thursday the 24th, and we are hosting a shuttle bus with pickups in Oshkosh, Appleton, and Green Bay to help you get to the broadcast if you're not right in the area. So that's Thursday, July 24th. Give a call. There's a 920-465-2502 is the number for tickets to get on that shuttle bus. It's 920-465-2502. Peninsula Players Theater in Door County, Thursday, July 24th. Be there or be square. The program starts at 11, but we'll, I'm sure, be there by 10 or so and have a chance to chat a little bit beforehand. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can also go to our website at wpr.org/Door County if you want to find out some more information on it. But it's next week, Thursday. I'm looking forward to getting up there. Renee and Emily are coming along with me, and we'll have a great time. Jesse in Blue Mounds is up next. Hi, Jesse.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I work for a garden store in Madison. I was listening in, and I heard something about Japanese beetles. We had a problem that came into our store. A man and a woman came in, and it was actually their hops plants, which are actually 10, 12 feet tall. They're getting ready to cut them down. And the store that I work in does brewing and gardening, so we kind of handle both adventures there. What they had was a Japanese beetle problem, and it was just tearing through their plant. We were going through all these ideas. We talked about neem oil, and they were really kind of apprehensive about spraying anything on the plant. So, you know, we've got all these experts on counter talking, and suddenly I just got this idea. I'm going to call my mom. So I call her up. As soon as she starts speaking, I remember one of our chores as a kid was to collect these little kits that we had made. Basically, we just took a yellow plastic funnel that you can pick up at a farm supply store for, you know, you got red for gas and yellow for diesel. And We used the yellow funnels, and we just clipped on a bread bag, put a little bit of water in the bottom, and the beetles would be attracted to the funnels. They'd fall in, and they'd get into the bag, and they'd either drown or couldn't climb their way out. And, I mean, we must have collected just hundreds of these beetles every day. At the end of the day, we'd go out there and just pull the bags off, put another bag on, put a little twist tie or something on there to attach back on. And it greatly reduced the problem. So if there's any people out there concerned about spraying certain types of plants with some kind of eradicant, then that's a nice mechanical solution.
So you hung that funnel on the plant, or would you on the plants, or what'd you do?
Well, we had in North Carolina we had grapevines, and that was what was.
Yeah, they love grapevines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and raspberries and.
I'm sorry, what you said?
I said and raspberries and about 300 plants we could name.
Just about anything, yeah. And you know, with grapes or with you know, hops, which is what these customers had an issue with. You're trellising these, so you know, mm-hmm. there's lots of places to just clip the funnels. You know, usually these funnels have a little tab on the edge with a little mm-hmm. hole in it, so you can hang it on the wall.
So,
and go ahead.
So you're saying that they were attracted to the color yellow? Is that the idea?
Most insects are attracted to yellow. We have white fly traps that
we
also use, and they're just
cards.
Yellow sticky traps.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, you'll have the whole thing will be carpeted with bugs, and you just throw it away. And so these funnels. I don't believe that we were even using yellow when I was younger. I think we just had like different colored blue and white, but they would basically fall in there and you know, color aside, we'd be pulling hundreds at the end of the day. Yellow is definitely an attractant. It's been proven for a lot of insects. So that, you know, if you're gonna make these kits, why not go ahead and do that?
Sure.
Yeah, and there's one other thing I wanted to touch on. At our store, we do a lot of soilless mixes, and probably half our store is devoted to hydroponics. And mm-hmm. A lot of people feel like, you know, that stuff is so high tech, when actually it can be even more simple. One thing that we focused on, despite the high tech, you know, stereotype, is, you know, the basics. And, you know, there's a gentleman that called in about his pepper plant. And yes, this year has been rather odd. I mean, the coming right out of a rather intense winter. But, you know, he said that he was getting some yellowing. I'd be curious to know where that yellowing was, whether it was, you know,
on the leaves.
On the leaves, yeah. But was it, you know, the entire leaf? Was it around the edges? Was it coming out of the veins? Was it, you know, a magnesium thing, a nitrogen thing? But, you know, one of the things that we suggest right away to anybody, have you checked your pH? You know, have you checked, you know, the parts per million things, you can send those and get tests done. You can buy those little test kits for like under $10. But, you know, simple, 9 times out of 10, the person says, well, no. And they'll come back in a week later, say they adjusted their pH, something real simple like lime or you know, you can get hydrated lime or liquefied lime, which is instantaneous. Oyster shells work really well if you're trying to increase the pH.
Yeah, that's
and
why
you can
we
go
always
the other
recommend
way as well.
Soil tests.
Mm-hmm. And the solution is usually right there most of the time. I just kind of wondered what your thoughts were on that.
Oh, yeah, I think that's
absolutely.
You're agreeing, Lisa.
Yeah. One of the things Extension always does is recommend a soil test because you're right. It's often not a disease problem, not an insect problem. It's a cultural problem that has to do with the soil, whether it's, you know, a physical problem that it doesn't drain well or whether it is a problem with the pH. Down here in southern Wisconsin, of course, we tend to have pretty high pH unless you're on sandy soils. And then, of course, it's a lot lower. But since this gentleman said that he was growing other peppers and tomatoes in the same area, I was thinking it probably wasn't a widespread pH problem, mm-hmm. but maybe something else that was...
Something else that was going on there.
And we did suggest he could take the soil sample.
Yeah, right, take the soil sample. Yeah. Yep, mm-hmm. So that's always a really good suggestion.
Thanks, Jesse. Right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have some more callers online. Dan in White Lake is up next. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. What is the proper time of year for me to prune the evergreen shrubs in front of my house? They are having very lush growth from the tips of the branches, but it's coming up every which way, and I think they ought to be shaped a little bit.
Okay, do you know what kind of evergreen it is? Is it a juniper or a yew?
To tell you the truth, it has the leaves go off alternatively and are flat instead of cylindrical.
Okay.
Okay, so we're probably looking at a yew. Okay. There are a couple of times during the year when the yew has a growth spurt. One is in spring, and then one is in summer. And you can usually shear it, do your shearing work in the spring. You will, again, get that second growth in summer. So if you want to do it after the second burst, you can do it at that time, too. So this is actually a good time to do that. You don't want to do it too much later, though, than August. I wouldn't, you know, August 1st, I kind of would lay off on that sort of thing.
Thank
so you could
All
do
right.
that now.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Matt in Middleton, we're up to you now. Hi, Matt.
Hi, good morning. My problem is I have ants that seem to love my tropical hibiscus, and it's gotten worse as the week's gone on. We're starting to get actually numerous blooms on our hibiscus, but if you walk up to it, there's probably 500 to 1,000 ants marching up and down and all over the plant, and I'm wondering if there's a cause and if there's a way to get rid of them that doesn't involve spraying insecticide on the plant.
Yeah, I'm curious about that many ants being on your hibiscus. Have you checked to see if you have some aphids or any other insects that may be dropping what is called honeydew and the ants are coming to eat that?
Well, I've looked over it and I haven't really seen any other bugs. What I do notice is that the ants seem to be crawling inside of the unopened new buds. So if I look at my new buds where I'm going to get a nice pink flower, there's many, many more ants on that than there are the open flowers.
Yeah.
Well, there could be some aphids in there. They they love new growth, you know, and sometimes they're green, so they can be very difficult to see. But if your leaves look at all sticky, you've probably got some kind of sucking insect and that's exuding that honeydew that Judy was talking about that is very attractive to ants. I can't see that many ants either on it unless there's something like that.
There's got to be scale or something.
Yeah, right. Look for, if it is scale, you might see some dark brown hard bumps on the stems, and that if you can pick them off, you'll see the little tiny crawler insects underneath. So check for that if it isn't aphids, but I'm betting there's some kind of sucking insect down there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what
if you
would
get rid of that,
way to get rid of them?
Well, depends on what kind of insect it is. If it's the scale, you can pick them off if it's not a very large plant. Trying to do this without any kind of insecticide, though, is going to be hard. You can spray with water, but if they're hiding in the buds, that's not going to help you very much. You might also check to make sure the ants haven't made a nest in the pot. Are you growing it in a pot?
Yeah, it's on our deck in a lava pot.
Yeah, make sure that the ants haven't decided to take up residence there as well. You might, again, I'm not sure whether the neem oil is labeled for hibiscus, but that would be a fairly low toxicity way to try and get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. And if it is in a pot, you may just want to look and see if you don't have a little nest of ants in the pot before you bring it back in, if there are that many wandering around.
Yeah.
And if it is aphids, is there any type of systemic that I can put in there that the plant may suck up and kill the thing that's keeping the ants there?
Not really anymore. Boy, they just don't have a whole lot for houseplant culture that you can do. That's the neem oil will take care of the aphids, though, and it will take care of the ants as well.
Do you know?
But unless there's an ant nest. If there's an ant nest, then you're going to have to either unpot the plant and physically remove them or use some kind of ant poison there.
Do you think safer soap would work on hibiscus, or does it burn hibiscus?
No, we've used it, but I'm not sure. We've used it when the plants have been inside, and that phytotoxicity might occur if they're in full sun outside, so I'm not sure.
Might want to move it into the shade.
And speaking of the neem oil, we've had a couple of callers already who've tried various locations to find the 70% neem, and they haven't they can't find any place that carries that strength. Where did you find, or where did you go to get that?
We found it at Jung's.
Found it at Jung's.
Yeah.
Get ready, Jung's.
Yeah, get ready, Jung's. And, you know, that's what I asked Phil. I said, where do I find that product? And he said, Jung's carries it. And I just went over there. They had it on the shelf, thank God. And I started spraying. So, yep.
All right. So, Jung's. And they're, folks from Jung's are on our program fairly regularly. And probably were trying to call in to let us know that. And we've got lots more callers online. Our guests today, Judy Roselle and Lisa Johnson. Judy is Assistant Superintendent of the West Madison Ag Research Station, and Lisa, Dane County UW Extension Home Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Judy Wright Roselle, Assistant Superintendent of the West Madison Agricultural Research Station at the UW-Madison, and Lisa Johnson, UW Dane County Extension Home Horticulture Educator. Really glad to have them with us today and certainly join in with your questions and comments as we move along. All the lines are filled, so we'll go right to the phones. And Ken in Elkhorn is up. Ken, hello.
Yeah, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a really quick question. We have a clematis, or clematis, I don't know how you say it. It grows very well. It blooms beautifully. The only problem is it shoots right up the trellis and then bushes at the top like a huge umbrella. And all the blooms are at the top. Is there something we can do to kind of get it fuller at the bottom or to get more blooms around the base all the way up?
Do you know what type of clematis it is?
Any idea as to the type?
I'm sorry, I was in a bad zone. I didn't hear the question.
Oh, do you know what type of clematis you have?
I have no idea. The flowers are kind of a pastel purple.
I think what Lisa might be referring to is, does it bloom on old wood or new growth, right, Lisa?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was
getting at. So,
yeah.
Do you know if it blooms on old growth or new growth?
It seems to bloom on new growth.
Okay.
Okay. Well, then you could chop it way back to anywhere between like 15 inches or so, you know, anywhere between a foot and I don't like to go much lower than that. You're an Elkhorn, so you're a little farther south, but I'd say about 15 inches.
And when do you do that?
Well, okay, the clematis pruning is kind of difficult. There are three different groups, and usually what they have you do is you usually do it in the spring, but one group you prune very hard, the second group you prune kind of halfway, and the third group you hardly touch. But if this is blooming only at the top, then we're assuming it's blooming only on new wood, so we need to get more new wood, new growth going. So I would do it in the early spring or very late fall.
Okay, and cut it down not closer than 15 or 18 inches to the ground.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Frank in Trout Lake, your turn now. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Good morning, or good afternoon, everyone. My question is this. What's your favorite way to keep flea beetles from riddling mustard?
Okay.
That's a problem we have, too. This is Judy. We use permethrin or some of the products with pyrethrins, which we use two different ones. One is called pyola oil. It has canola oil and pyrethrins in it. And the other one is a pyganic, which is a certified organic compound that has pyrethrums in it. And we buy both online. I haven't found the pyganic may be offered here in the garden centers, but I have not seen it. So they really help with the flea beetles on eggplants and all the other things, too, in addition to the greens that you're talking about.
All right.
Good luck. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Betty wants to know about her onion sets that are yellowing. What causes those onion sets to turn yellow? Go ahead, Judy.
Are these, you're talking about the onions you have in the garden at this point?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, two things may be happening. They do like some nitrogen, but ours are starting to yellow a little or getting a little gray, and we found that we have onion thrips. And I'm curious, is it gray or is it real yellowing or?
Yellowing, she said. We don't have her on.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that may be more of a soil-related problem. And onions are really, I think, kind of difficult to grow. It depends on whether she put in little sets or whether she
put in sets.
Okay. And then sometimes it's, you know, the time of year you get them in and how far they're growing. I guess I'm kind of hedging here a little bit. I'd like to be able to ask her a couple of questions about the nitrogen in the soil and whether the bulbs are nice and big. They may be just dying down. Or whether they're very little. And some onions are produce big bulbs and then die down, and some are the very small ones. You know, they don't produce big bulbs and then they die early. So I guess it's really I'm curious.
Well, just put it out there. And
Yeah, and it could be a nitrogen problem. It could be, you know, a dryness. It could be water. I guess it would be a complement of things that can cause the onions to yellow. They sure don't like waterlogged soil, and that can be a big problem.
Oh, and we do want to make sure that we get rid of that onion debris in case it is thrips.
Right.
Because the adults and nymphs will overwinter.
Yeah, and I know we didn't have thrips a problem at all on onions until last year, and now it's become a real problem, and we're trying to clean up all the debris and where they're coming in from, we don't know.
Yeah, but I've seen that before, and it looks pretty ugly.
Oh, it gets very ugly.
All right, well, Jennifer in Van Dyne, Wisconsin, has a question for you. Let's go to Jen. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I am trying to grow pumpkins and birdhouse gourds this summer, and I've noticed, I think it's powdery mildew on the leaves. One of the plants is really stressed out. It has a lot of leaves that are affected, and then I've noticed it's just starting on the gourds as well. What do you recommend for getting rid of that?
Ooh, well, once it's there, it's really hard. You can't get rid of it. You can control it a little, and we've been using a couple of things. You can use the neem oil we were talking about. It's also a fungicide, which is pretty amazing that it's an insecticide, a fungicide, a bactericide, you name it. Yeah, and a miticide. We have used something new called Serenade, which is a BT, but it's also controls. It's for powdery mildew and downy mildew. That's been working. And it's also an organic product.
Oh, good.
And it's really, it's actually a certified organic. So,
is that found at regular garden centers like Stein's or like that, or do I have to go online?
You may have to go online for the Serenade. There is a company out of Minnesota that sells it, but I would check the garden centers here around your home first.
Mm-hmm. And is there a chance that that'll spread to tomatoes, peppers, things like that?
Powdery mildews are usually fairly species-specific, so it's probably, you know, the two cucurbits may be closely related enough between the pumpkin and the, what did you say, squash?
The birdhouse gourd.
Or the gourds, yeah. That you're getting, you know, the same species on it, but no, it shouldn't.
Okay.
However, if you do have powdery mildew on one thing, that tells you the conditions are right for powdery mildew, even though it's a different species on something else. So try and keep your air circulation good, and try not to water on the leaves. Of course, Mother Nature hasn't been particularly helpful that in some areas, but
I think good Lisa luck. Has a good point, though, that when you're gardening, make sure you really give plants a lot of space so that airflow and sun and everything can keep that powdery mildew down.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Jen, for calling. Appreciate it. Somebody wondered about a perennial reference book and perennials for Minnesota and Wisconsin. Don Engebretson's book is a good book on perennials.
Mm-hmm. What is her name? Tracy De Sabato Oust. Has a couple, kind of a series. One is on design, another one's on maintaining the perennial garden, and I think she has yet another one in colors. So, you know, particularly when you're looking for like tasks like deadheading and when to do what, that maintenance one might be helpful. I do like her books, but I've got lots of
books I can recommend.
We could spend the whole.
All right, Lisa in Marshfield, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, about 3 or 4 years ago, I decided to build a wildflower garden, and I bought this wildflower mix at a local store, and I didn't read the label, and it contained an invasive yarrow. And all the other wildflowers are now dead, and all I have is this invasive white yarrow.
Oh, dear. Oh,
it's everywhere, and I cannot get rid of it. And I've tried weeding it and pulling it, and I've tried weed killers, and I hate to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I don't know how to get rid of it now.
You tried Roundup?
I've tried the equivalent of Roundup, and it kills the plant, but it doesn't seem to kill the seeds. So you have dead plant, and then you have the seeds that grow, and then you get another whole growth.
Right. Can you mow it off before it goes to seed and then apply the Roundup?
I've tried to do that. I've tried to apply the weed killer when the plant is still very small, mm-hmm. before it even blooms, and it kills the plant, but it doesn't seem to kill the little tiny seeds.
Yeah, you've got a seed bank.
You've got a seed bank. You've got lots of seeds. You have to keep at
I just have to keep doing it over and over and over again.
Yeah, until the seed bank is exhausted.
Oh,
we
my
have.
Goodness.
I know. I'm sorry. It's the same problem with garlic mustard, and people say, "Well, why don't you just lay a carpet or something on it?" Well, yeah, but that won't kill the seeds.
Would you recommend rototilling it and then applying the Roundup even in the soil that you
No, just bring up more seeds. And possibly different kinds of seeds. And then
keep at it.
Yeah. Yep. And Roundup only works on green plant tissue, not on
seeds. Doesn't work on seeds.
Okay. Well, thanks. I'll keep at it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Good luck.
Kay in New London. On to you. Hi, Kay.
Good morning. I was just going to say the Tracy DeSabato Oss well-tended perennial garden has all the references you would need.
Excellent. Thank you for...
And especially, they have it by the listing of the plant specific, and then her appendixes are excellent. Which ones you can use for lower maintenance, short-lived, anything that needs pruning. It's really an excellent book.
Yeah, I really like her writing, too.
Yes.
Thank you. Sure. Thanks very much. And how's her last name spelled?
It's D, capital D, I, and then capital D, small I, capital S-A-B-T-O, and then... space, and then capital A-U-S-T. So it's DeSabato Oust.
Okay. It's a...
Sorry about that.
You know, when you're an author, it's tempting to change your name.
Smith.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right. Let's go to Lynette in Hubertus. Your turn. Hi, Lynette.
Good afternoon. I've got a question about knockout roses. I planted about 5 of them in early to mid-May. And within a matter of a couple of weeks, they were skeletonized, and I sent pictures to Phil Pilateri, and he came back and said that they were probably eaten by slugs.
It's pear slugs or rose slugs, not the type of slug that you see sliming along your hostas, just to throw that in.
Okay. And he didn't really give me any kind of a solution or anything to deal with them, but just told me what it was, and I asked around, and I've tried the beer thing, and...
No, that's the wrong kind of slug.
Yeah.
That's the slimy slug that's on your hostas. The rose or the pear slug is an insect that it looks kind of slimy in its larval form because it has the delightful habit of throwing its feces on its back to deter predators from eating it. I wouldn't want to eat it. Mm. And it does skeletonize your leaves, but it's only around for a very short period of time. In that time, of course, it does do a lot of damage. And I usually try and remember what time of year that is. I think it's about the second week in May or so.
Yeah, I think I was reading the other day.
And that's the time to treat it. Now they're gone, so there's no point in trying to do anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Are the rose bushes going to come back? Are the flowers going to come back? Because I have not had any flowers at all, and just within the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Some new leaves have sprouted.
These are, you said these are new plants that you just put in?
Yes.
Okay. They're probably pretty stressed right now, having lost a lot of their photosynthetic tissue. And so they're probably going to produce just leaves for a while. Which is probably not so bad because the Japanese beetles would be eating the roses,
right.
The flowers anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know that it'll flower a whole lot more this year, but certainly next year. And watch out for those guys. They're not real easy to see. I even though I knew they were coming, I missed them too until they, you know, already done some damage. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of a dark green usually. Sometimes they're hiding out under the leaves.
I was thinking with degree days, was it like 500 or 600 degree
days? Something
that
like
that.
Coming
out? So if you kind of can watch and get information on degree days.
Yeah, we do have a fact sheet on those. I'm frantically trying to find the degree days here, but I'm not finding it.
And treat them with what next year?
Oh, I think you could probably use 7 or something mm-hmm. on that order. You probably could use, I'm not sure whether insecticidal soap causes problems with roses or not.
I'd have to look the
label. But okay. Certainly 7 would be fine.
Okay.
Well, the plant is not all lost.
No. Absolutely not.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. Sue in Wauwatosa, your turn now. Hi, Sue.
Hey, hello. I have a question about what to put in my flower bed with that I have a lot of lilies of the valley. Once they die back, there's nothing else there. Can you recommend something else I could put in there that would continue to be green and possibly bloom the rest of the summer?
Is it supposed to compete with, you mean plant among your lily of the valley?
Right. It would have to compete with them. And the lilies of the valley are fairly established, too.
Oh, boy. We're thinking.
So you're thinking about just like an annual at this time of year to bring in color?
Well,
or you're talking
annuals
about...
would be easy. I'd love to have something that would be a perennial that would uh-huh. that I wouldn't have to replace every year.
Uh-huh.
Something easy.
Ah. And you
and
want
it blooms
something
all year, right?
Right.
And you want bloom all year in color?
Yeah.
Well,
that'd be nice.
Something just to take over from the lilies of the valley, because once those leaves die back, I really don't have anything in that bed.
Boy, lilies of the valley set up such a mat of roots. It's really hard to get something to come through them. I don't know. There might be some of the.
This is a real shady spot.
It gets morning sun.
Okay.
So it's not completely shady. I have a bleeding heart plant there, too, which same thing. Mm-hmm.
That dies back, too.
so
maybe, I don't know, possibly. So I'm trying to think of something that's going to have to be tall enough to get above the leaves when it's in bloom.
Well, I know I have some ferns. I don't know if you like ferns, but we've got an area that's real shady where we have the lily of the valley and we have ferns mm-hmm. there.
Okay.
And then I have some wild ginger. The beautiful wild ginger kind of grows over and comes in then.
That would compete with it.
Yeah. Now, it's not very tall. Wild ginger's really low. But if you put in some ferns and put in the wild ginger, it kind of helps even to control some of the movement of the lilies, so mm-hmm.
okay.
You might also try like one of the more vigorous clematis, not clematis, columbine,
mm-hmm.
clematis.
Okay,
those would be tall. They would give you color more early in the season. So mm-hmm. I don't know that that would solve the problem mm-hmm. either. You need something that you want something to bloom. Oh, I know. Japanese anemone, that'll
do it.
That'll do it. That blooms later in the season, but it does tend to get rather large, and it is somewhat aggressive.
So, just like the lilies of the valley.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, and hostas bloom and are real pretty, too, and I think people forget that when they're thinking mm-hmm. about them. There's so many different hostas now. There are like 6 pages in some catalogs.
Yeah.
So, I have some that are so many different colors, like, you know, the nice blue ones, the leaves are blue, and then they have blue, beautiful white flowers about this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Right. Will the lilies of the valley survive with those?
Yes, they will.
Okay, because I don't want them to be gone. I love those.
Oh, I know.
They're so short-lived.
Yeah, the fragrance is so nice, too.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, too, because we have some right with our Lilies of the Valley, and they seem to coexist pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, good. Well, I'll try that.
All right.
All right, thanks for the suggestions.
Thank you, Sue. And Virgin in Germantown, we'll turn to you next. Hi.
Hello. I have a question today on June-bearing raspberries. The sprouts that I have newly planted from last in the spring are filled with the leaves are filled with holes, and after that, then they die off. And there's another group right next to them that have fruit on from that are the older ones, and they are just fine. I don't want to spray them, but what would be the best spray? I haven't seen any insects or any worms, so I can't identify what's causing it.
Oh boy, we kind of hate to recommend a chemical with it. You know, it's like a doctor just throwing antibiotic at you when he doesn't know whether you have a virus or a... you know, something that's going to be treated by the antibiotic. You say you've seen holes in the canes or just in the leaves?
Holes in the leaves.
Just in the leaves.
They're almost like flea beetle holes. I don't know if they'd be on there or not.
I don't think that's not one of the things that you typically see them on. I don't know whether any larvae that might have already left. I mean, if it was Japanese beetles, you'd see them.
No, I haven't seen a thing. I've looked carefully every day.
That's bizarre. Have you looked under the leaves also?
Yes, and this is the first time I've had them. I haven't had raspberries very long, but I love them, and so I want to find out how to take care of them.
Yeah. Sure. Well, we could try the good old neem oil again.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, as a deterrent to whatever it is,
right.
At least.
And one thing about the neem oil, it's really, really a very safe product. It's actually used in India, or was used, I know, when they first started bringing it out as like a toothpaste. It's used as medicinal. So you can spray it and eat the raspberries the next day. So you could try that. Because it does, as Lisa said, it's a feeding deterrent. So maybe whatever is there, we'll go somewhere else and eat something else.
It's possible it's already gone too.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's worth a try.
Right.
And thank you very much for calling. And Judy and Lisa, here we are out of time. Thank you both so much for being with us. Just to remind everybody that 2009 Wisconsin Garden Journal, the 14th edition, is out and available. It's go to your local bookstore, or you can go online to MAMGA, and you can order it from off the Madison Area Master Gardeners Association website. It's $14.95, and they probably have some photos or whatever on the website too. You can take another look at it, or more of a description. So I hope you'll take a look at it. And Jim Packard reminded me, my other guest next week in Door County at 11 is, Bob Lautenbach, who is a grower, cherry grower in the area, and he'll be on with Dean Vollenberg as we talk the cherry business live from Door County next week on July 24th. That's Thursday, and I hope you can come and join us for that. And again, Judy and Lisa, thank you. Judy Roselle is Assistant Superintendent of the Madison West Ag Research Station, and Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. On Monday, there's a great book out. It's called What the Nose Knows. Wait till you hear the author and what he's got to say. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.